Tipping Point with Zach Yenser is a paid program. The views expressed are not necessarily the views of KVOI or any organization the host is affiliated with.
Tucson, good morning and welcome to Tipping Point with Zach Yenser here on 1030 The Voice. Every day, Monday through Friday, 9 to 10, we share the stories and strategies of the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. In-depth news and discussion. Good morning, January the 8th, Wednesday here. Thanks for listening. We are moving with the times, moving with the news here. An outlook on what we're up to today. We are tracking the live feed of President Trump's live address to the nation about the events in Iran and Iraq the last couple of days. It was set for 9 o'clock. It is not started yet, but we are tracking that. And when it does, we will patch over there here for the first half hour of this show and listen into this as it goes. That's what we do here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk here in Tucson. We make sure you are updated on important issues happening in Tucson and beyond. We do have a hard stop on that, though, Tucson. At the bottom of the hour, I welcome in a nationwide history maker. Our very own Dennis Arnold from Barrio Brewery is set to become the first employee, all employee owned brewery in the country. And so at the bottom of the hour, we will either way switch over to that conversation. Excited that Tucson gets to say that we are home to the first all employee owned brewery in the country. I think it's a really cool thing for Tucson to be talking about. And so we'll have that at the bottom of the hour. Again, we are tracking, waiting for the president to walk out the doors here in the foyer in the White House to address the nation this morning. And the address comes on the heels of a missile attack from Iran into Iraq at U.S. Stations in Iraq. One thing we do know is that the United States actually had heads up knowledge. And so that's one thing we're piecing together. This was not a surprise attack. The U.S. knew it was coming, had time to prepare. And it sounds like that came from intelligence and Iran itself. And so there seems to be a little bit of showmanship maybe going on. We're not sure yet. But USA Today is reporting that we knew in advance what was going on here. So we'll keep you in the loop on that. So again, set for 9. We're waiting for it to go live. We'll take our 9:15 break as usual. 790-2040 is your live line today to give us a call and join the conversation. I did have one topic. We'll get into it and we'll cut ourselves off when the president walks through the doors. But I've had a couple of interesting conversations. This is going back to Tucson. We call our show Tipping Point because we believe that we're at a tipping point in Tucson where the decisions we make in the next 5 or 10 years will shape the next 10, that we've had a series of small steps over the last few years that could balloon into something bigger and really special for Tucson. But I was in a conversation on Monday about the city of Tucson's role in incentivizing and investing in development and businesses here in Tucson. And the question came up, I was going to bring this up today either way, and we'll use this to kind of discuss local Tucson topics before the president walks through the door here to address the Iran situation in just a minute. But the question was asked is why is the city in the position to have to incentivize development? And this was specifically around the urban core. And the answer that came to me from city staff was really interesting, that when a development is wanting to come to Tucson, no matter how big or how small, before they can get the money unlocked, the lending to make the project go, they have to prove to some of the larger lenders that they have a local lending partner. And what I was surprised to hear is that there is a lack of confidence on the part of both having local lending, but also the local market, that there are what is called weak fundamentals. The job market isn't strong yet. The economy here isn't quite strong yet. There's a lack of faith in the Tucson economy and remaining. And that's not necessarily a surprising part. The surprising part is that for the last 6 years and continuing, the city of Tucson has had to be that local lending partner. That was the part I was fascinated by. In other words, not necessarily only a lending partner, but a funding partner to say, look, we'll provide this incentive, or we'll provide this subsidy. And that local support gives the bigger projects and the bigger guys confidence in Tucson. Because I asked, I said, these are big national, sometimes multinational development companies. They don't have the financial bandwidth. And the answer was, there's criteria related to local lending that Tucson can't quite fulfill yet. And so my thought, since that has been, what is that? If there was a silver bullet, what's the one thing that Tucson could do to bring security in the market besides the long-term local inclusive economic development? I really think, and I don't think that I'm being a fanboy on this, I think it's the startup and entrepreneurship ecosystem. If we can show that Tucson is a place where our aerospace startups, our tech startups, our health and sciences startups can really thrive and go, then that is what I think will help develop more confidence in the market, retain young talent, create this sense that Tucson is a place where big ideas can fly. Is that the only way? Of course not. Is that the quickest way? That's my gut hunch. I think that what it's going to take to either grow existing businesses big enough to create that confidence, or bring in new businesses, or see any policy shifts, those are some long haul things. But the university, the private market, the entrepreneurs coming out of the university, or just in general, to me, that's the fastest track towards creating confidence in Tucson's market, to where we can get that local lending partnerships, that we can create confidence that Tucson is a place where things can happen, because we just don't have that yet. Are we seeing some momentum? 100%. We talked with George Hammond about that on a monthly basis, but we're just not seeing that when people look at a Phoenix or a Denver or an Austin, there's just greater confidence in the market that a project that they put down will go. And until there's that confidence, we're going to have to keep leaning on the public sector to incentivize and subsidize. And so we talk a lot about on this station, not maybe as much on this show, but on the station is why is our public sector so involved, and why do we have to be so involved? Because that's all we got. Is the truth, Tucson, is what I'm finding. That's all we got. It's not as much a philosophical decision. That's all we got. Because we don't have a market that the private sector feels confident enough in. And we see this time and time again. When companies, when regions, when cities, when whatever is at the point of innovation, often the private sector lags in confidence, lags in willingness to jump in. And so the public sector has to do the support and the funding up front. Let's go ahead and go to our first break and come back so we can hopefully catch on the back end there the president's address about Iran to the nation. We'll return in a minute.
We're the place where Tucson comes to talk. 1030, The Voice.
Hi, this is Jason with Keller Williams Realty. Today I want to share a pricing strategy with you that I would call speculative. It's where we take a home's fair market value and we would speculate a bit above that price and hope that a buyer is going to come along and pay top dollar due to its unique demand. Stay tuned next week for another pricing tip. Call me if I can help with anything at 520-310-6761.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Tucson, welcome back to Tipping Point with Zach Yenser here on 1030 The Voice, your source for trusted local news and talk on the air here in Tucson. I have my phone here streaming just so we know the moment when President Donald Trump walks into the foyer in the White House to address the nation about the recent activities in Iran. That was set for 11 a.m. Eastern time, 9 a.m. our time. We're obviously way past that, but we are waiting to catch that address when it happens. Just talk to our team here at the station. We'll run this through bottom of the hour news if it starts and doesn't finish by our regular break at 9:30. So our team is at work here to make sure that you are able to listen and are up to date, and we catch this live moment as it happens. We're talking some Tucson stuff until then, but are ready to turn our attention over to the White House when this address happens. We do have a drop deadline, though, for our hour at 9:35. Whatever happens, Dennis Arnold from Barrio Brewery is in the green room already, it looks like, for our second half of the hour. Tucson, I think, is proud and should be proud to say that we are home to the only all-employee-owned brewery in the country. So we're going to talk about what it looks like to have a company that's owned by the employees. It's a recently new model of doing business, and Tucson has the first and only, once it lands, employee-owned brewery in the country. So we're looking forward to that conversation. Here's what we do know about some of the recent events in Iran. Iran, as reported by USA Today, fired more than a dozen missiles Tuesday in retaliation for a U.S. drone strike days earlier that killed one of Tehran's most powerful military leaders, Qasem Soleimani. The missiles targeted Al-Asad Air Base in Iraq's western Anbar province and another base in Erbil in Iraq's semi-autonomous Kurdish region. The extent of damage to the bases are not immediately clear. It sounds like, if anything, it was minimal. And what we also do know is that the early warning system in place actually gave U.S. forces advanced knowledge that missiles had been launched, allowing for troops and other personnel to scramble into hardened bunkers for safety. U.S. coalition personnel in Iraq on the mission to combat ISIS have been practicing drills for missile attacks for some time. The official said the early warning system worked. And so that's what we do know as we await the president to address the nation. The other thing that is, I think, important to note that hasn't been discussed as it happens, in my opinion, and even today as we look at the last week, it seems like the reporting and even though it's not credible, of course, but just the social media reaction, I think the more we look at what has happened in Iran in the last week, we can't put that into a vacuum of the week. There have been aggravations and proxy and micro attacks since June of this year, and the potential to take out Soleimani, whether or not you agree with it philosophically or not, has been something now we know on the table since May during the Trump administration, and even earlier in the Obama administration. This has been an option on the table throughout the activities in the Middle East. It was always viewed as a distraction and potentially negative consequence to other activities in the region with our coalition allies. Again, as I mentioned on Monday, I think to say that this was a distraction from impeachment, I'm not quite sure that is a fair statement. It would seem like, with the intelligence that we get to know as the public, that this has been on the table since May. The moment to do it was last week, and aggravations have been occurring since June. So I think those are just important things to To bring up. We are getting a little bit of kind of some mixed times. We do know that the president's address is going to air live in Iran at 7:30 p.m. their time. We were told here in the States it would be 9 o'clock, so we're keeping the feed up. It very well could start at 9:30, but we're prepared either way here at the studio. And again, at 9:35, we'll be talking to Dennis Arnold, the founder of Barrio Brewery. Go ahead and, you know what, he's in the green room right now. Let's go ahead and see if we can bring Dennis in, and then we can keep tracking this live address with the president. We're doing things a little bit differently today. This was not the show I woke up planning to do, but this is the show that I want to do because I think it's cool that we can track this live and make sure that you listening to 1030 The Voice in Tucson get the best possible opportunity to stay up to date on what is happening in our city and in our country. Tom, a live question. Are we going to head to a break or just go straight through the bottom of the hour?
We don't have another break until the bottom of the hour. Scheduled.
Sounds good.
Break, which would be Bloomberg and then CBS headline news or the president's address.
All right.
It's a kind of a juggling game we're doing right now. We're juggling.
We're hanging out. But I think this is a benefit to our Tucson listeners. And with that, we just want to appreciate Dennis Arnold for being a little bit early and rolling with us. So glad you're here. And we're going to get you in and have a conversation.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I'm rarely accused of being early. So it's great to be here.
Yes, this was the day. Yeah, again, not the show that I woke up plenty to do, but we're kind of trying to figure out when the president's going to walk through the doors and address the nation about the activities in Iran. But the big news on our show today is that we have Dennis Arnold from Barrio Brewery, founder, here in studio. You look to be, as it gets stood up, the first all employee owned brewery in not only Arizona but the country.
In a way, we're the first brewery to go 100% all in at once. Breweries in the past who have done it over 10, 15, or 20 years, a piece at a time. New Belgium was one that really led the way. The owners divested themselves over 14 years or so. And the nice story about that is, a big company, Kirin Beer, just came in and bought it from the employees for $350 million. So they had reported that over the years, through their ESOP, they were able to contribute over $300 million to people's retirement accounts. And that's pretty impressive stuff.
And you use the acronym ESOP.
Employee Stock Ownership Program. It was something that was developed in the 1970s by the federal government to give incentives for businesses to allow their employees to basically own their means of production. And there's currently a steady number of about 3,500 of them in the nation. They run the gamut from construction companies to breweries.
Okay. Amazing. And as you clarified, you're the first to do it all at once.
Yeah, we're all in. We were like, you know, why tiptoe?
Yeah.
My wife and I, we've been together for 35 years. I've been working myself in the restaurant business for 45 years.
Incredible.
And, you know, we got to the point where our third and last child's just about ready to leave college. And we're like, why don't we take a break and, one, quit working together and then just enjoy it? And so through the years, we've had people come and, you know, make offers on wanting to buy us. And it never really felt right because you don't know what's going to happen. And I've had people with me for 25 years that have made absolutely no plans on what they're going to do, you know, when they get old. So this employee stock ownership program seemed to be a really great fit. We've been fortunate enough to not have anything horrible happen to us in our lives. You know, 9/11 certainly was a wake-up call for what can happen to you in business. But we got through that, and we've been fortunate to do it well. And so at the end of the day, letting our employees have the same opportunity to have a dignified retirement and one that's well-financed and will far exceed their Social Security net is a great way to bow out.
Yeah. Incredible. And this was a wonderful Christmas gift. This came out around Christmas. It was good timing.
The timing was kind of interesting. It's an extremely complex thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you really have just got to go all into it. It's an expensive proposition because there's so many, lawyers and accountants involved.
Yeah. U.S. troops and other
Dennis Arnold, we're going to break to the president and then we'll come right back to you.
This is in the grand foyer. The vice president has now come out to stand next to the lectern. He's also accompanied by Secretary of Defense Esper, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and other members of the military branches. The president should be out shortly. We'll be taking your phone calls after the president's remarks. The phone numbers are for Democrats, 202-748-8920. Republicans, 202-748-8921. And all others, 20.
Well, it might have been a little bit of a false alarm, Zach. The vice president, Spence, came out. They're still waiting for Trump. So we're going to continue monitoring, and I'm going to turn it back to you.
Well, then. Tom, I think the president's walking through now.
I think you're right. Here we go.
As long as I'm president of the United States, Iran will never be allowed to have a nuclear weapon. Good morning. I'm pleased to inform you the American people should be extremely grateful and happy. No Americans were harmed in last night's attack by the Iranian regime. We suffered no casualties. All of our soldiers are safe, and only minimal damage was sustained at our military bases. Our great American forces are prepared for anything. Iran appears to be standing down, which is a good thing for all parties concerned and a very good thing for the world. No American or Iraqi lives were lost because of the precautions taken, the dispersal of forces, and an early warning system that worked very well. I salute the incredible skill and courage of America's men and women in uniform. For far too long, all the way back to 1979, to be exact, nations have tolerated Iran's destructive and destabilizing behavior in the Middle East and beyond. Those days are over. Iran has been the leading sponsor of terrorism, and their pursuit of nuclear weapons threatens the civilized world. We will never let that happen. Last week, we took decisive action to stop a ruthless terrorist from threatening American lives. At my direction, the United States military eliminated the world's top terrorist, Qasem Soleimani. As the head of the Quds Force, Soleimani was personally responsible for some of the absolutely worst atrocities. He trained terrorist armies, including Hezbollah, launching terrorist strikes against civilian targets. He fueled bloody civil wars all across the region. He viciously wounded and murdered thousands of U.S. troops, including the planting of roadside bombs that maim and dismember their victims. Soleimani directed the recent attacks on U.S. personnel in Iraq that badly wounded four service members and killed one American, and he orchestrated the violent assault on the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. In recent days, he was planning new attacks on American targets, but we stopped him. Soleimani's hands were drenched in both American and Iranian blood. He should have been terminated long ago. By removing Soleimani, we have sent a powerful message to terrorists. If you value your own life, you will not threaten the lives of our people. As we continue to evaluate options in response to Iranian aggression, the United States will immediately impose additional punishing economic sanctions on the Iranian regime. These powerful sanctions will remain until Iran changes its behavior. In recent months alone, Iran has seized ships in international waters, fired an unprovoked strike on Saudi Arabia, and shot down two U.S. drones. Iran's hostilities substantially increased after the foolish Iran nuclear deal was signed in 2013, and they were given $150 billion, not to mention $1.8 billion in cash. Instead of saying thank you to the United States, they chanted death to America. In fact, they chanted death to America the day the agreement was signed. Then Iran went on a terror spree, funded by the money from the deal, and created hell in Yemen, Syria, Lebanon, Afghanistan, and Iraq. The missiles fired last night at us and our allies were paid for with the funds made available by the last administration. The regime also greatly tightened the reins on their own country, even recently killing 1,500 people at the many protests that are taking place all throughout Iran. The very defective JCPOA expires shortly anyway and gives Iran a clear and quick path to nuclear breakout. Iran must abandon its nuclear ambitions and end its support for terrorism. The time has come for the United Kingdom, Germany, France, Russia, and China to recognize this reality. They must now break away from the remnants of the Iran deal, or JCPOA. And we must all work together toward making a deal with Iran that makes the world a safer and more peaceful place. We must also make a deal that allows Iran to thrive and prosper and take advantage of its enormous untapped potential. Iran can be a great country. Peace and stability cannot prevail in the Middle East as long as Iran continues to foment violence, unrest, hatred, and war. The civilized world must send a clear and unified message to the Iranian regime. Your campaign of terror, murder, mayhem will not be tolerated any longer. It will not be allowed to go forward. Today, I am going to ask NATO to become much more involved in the Middle East process. Over the last 3 years, under my leadership, our economy is stronger than ever before, and America has achieved energy independence. These historic accomplishments change our strategic priorities. These are accomplishments that nobody thought were possible. And options in the Middle East became available. We are now the number one producer of oil and natural gas anywhere in the world. We are independent, and we do not need Middle East oil. The American military has been completely rebuilt under my administration at a cost of $2.5 trillion. U.S. armed forces are stronger than ever before. Our missiles are big, powerful, accurate, lethal, and fast. Under construction are many hypersonic missiles. The fact that we have this great military and equipment, however, does not mean we have to use it. We do not want to use it. American strength, both military and economic, is the best deterrent. 3 months ago, after destroying 100% of ISIS and its territorial caliphate, we killed the savage leader of ISIS, al-Baghdadi, who was responsible for so much death, including the mass beheadings of Christians, Muslims, and all who stood in his way. He was a monster. Al-Baghdadi was trying again to rebuild the ISIS caliphate and failed. Tens of thousands of ISIS fighters
have been killed or captured during my administration. ISIS is a natural enemy of Iran. The destruction of ISIS is good for Iran, and we should work together on this and other shared priorities. Finally, to the people and leaders of Iran, we want you to have a future and a great future, one that you deserve, one of prosperity at home and harmony with the nations of the world. The United States is ready to embrace peace with all who seek it. I want to thank you, and God bless America. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
And that was our late breaking cut to the president's address to the nation about the events in Iran. We want to thank Dennis Arnold for working with us on the fly to piece that into what was already planned to be our conversation today about Barrio Brewery. The good news is we started earlier and that went through what would have been a commercial anyway. So we're not really missing any time at all. So thank you for working with us.
Oh, not a problem. It was an interesting thing you had to say.
Absolutely. We our commitment here on KVOI is to keep you abreast of all the local issues and news that is shaping our future today and tomorrow here. We want to thank C-SPAN as well for helping us to make that happen. So Dennis Arnold, just to review, in case anybody joined us in the last couple minutes, you're the founder of Barrio Brewing Company, and you announced in just the last month or so that you will transfer the entirety of the business's ownership to its employees through an employee stock ownership plan this month in January 2020. What makes you unique is you did it all at once. Many other companies have done it in kind of phases. You were all in all at once, first in the U.S., first in Arizona to do it that way is our understanding. So welcome back.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We were fortunate in that when we got into business in 1991, I think we had $35,000 collected up amongst a bunch of people. So we'd never lost the mentality that you have to do things and do it affordably. We were fortunate through the years to grow ourselves organically, not get into any troubles borrowing money and things like that. And then the company grew. Mm-hmm. And the people that made it grow had to be 1,000 people over the years that worked for us. So this is kind of a way to pay tribute to all the people that that helped us. And definitely we have some other things coming up where we're going to be doing some things for the community as well, because Barrio Brewing Company wouldn't be where it is today without the support of Tucson. And that is not going to go unnoticed as well.
I want to talk about that Tucson piece probably in our last segment together before we leave each other end of the hour. But, it's so funny. Yesterday, we talked about the minimum wage increase that just kicked in. And there's this constant, I think, challenge of cost of living is going up and cost to business is going up. And employees are saying, how do we survive? How do we thrive, especially in a local small business? I'm not getting into any of the politics of any of it. I'm just asking, what do you think that what you're doing shows the way of kind of in the economy we live in today, in the era of business? How can locally owned business really give employees something to latch onto long term in a business that seems very turnover driven?
Well, we're fortunate in that Tucson supports us so strongly that we seem to be very resistant to falling into the trap of being a high turnover business. We've had people with us, like I said, for 25 years. The minimum wage was quite controversial because one of the things with like tipped employees coming along, that taking that out, like my payroll, I think our payroll for last year was probably somewhere around $1.6 million. And when you start thinking about that from a business standpoint, going, wow, I'm responsible for a lot of livelihoods. And you just think about and pause and go, well, how am I supposed to do this and try to keep prices, as down as low as you can in Tucson? It's difficult. So we have incrementally had to have added a quarter here and a quarter there, because you had that, you have healthcare, and you have everything else. It's accounting more and more for a larger piece of what payroll is. That said, we employ a lot of young people that don't understand that they're going to be old people So we've had retirement plans in place, IRAs and things like that. And maybe 10 or 12% of our employees participate in those because they just don't ever think they're going to get old. So this is a way that everybody's automatically enrolled.
Right.
And the people with us long-term, regardless, it's like Social Security.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who's going to be with us long-term is going to have one hell of a good retirement plan. And it's not going to be dependent upon what the government is. Because if you read, the news, it's not a pretty picture what they think is going to be happening with Social Security and its ability to be paying out what it says it's going to be paying out.
Right. So this is a way for not only a local business to take care of employees in a very unique and competitive way, but it's also, to me, it just seems a trend that local businesses are taking to secure their employees and their business in a really innovative way. Do you feel like you're part of an innovative movement, or is this?
Well,
is this...
I think putting that aside, I think the first thing that is our strength is our culture. We treat everybody like their family, and that's how we want to be treated. And so when you do that, you can build, if you have that as a foundation, everything else is just a piece of that, be it the wage that they're making, the benefits that they're getting, the vacations, whatever it is. You've got to start with a solid foundation of I'm going to treat you as I want to be treated. And so when it came down to this, it was like going, it was an easy decision because I'm looking around at people that I've worked with for so long going, you know, I'm going to make sure that I can do whatever's humanly possible to make sure the rest of your life is as happy as mine has been to this point. I'm turning 60 years old next month. Mm. And so, you know, wasn't that far away from like saying, hey, I'd rather not, you know, work every day of my life. All of my kids, worked from the time that they were 13 years old. And all three of them, the last thing they wanted to do in their adult lives was be in the restaurant business because they understood it's very, very demanding. And so they all got fantastic educations at the University of Arizona and are moving on. And so there was no, passing it down through bloodline business-wise. And so we thought, you know what? The people that we work with are as much our families as our kids. And so we just found that it was such a natural path for us to take.
That's wonderful. Well, when we come back from the break, we're going to continue part two with Dennis Arnold, founder of Barrio Brewing Company. It's the first brewery in the nation that will become 100% employee owned from the moment this program will be effective. And I just am so proud that Tucson can say that a company that we've hopefully supported at least decently over the many, many years is getting to be home to what I think is some great innovation that comes from your care for your employees and for your community. When we come back, we'll talk about what it means to be a business in a community that is very food and drink and service oriented. 60% of those companies we know are family owned and independent. And so what does it mean to be a business in that context? And how do we help you and how do we help employees feel good in those situations? A first in the nation story here on Tipping Point with Zach Yenser here on 1030 The Voice. We'll be right back for the last part of our hour together. Don't go anywhere.
CBS News at the top and bottom of every hour. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
Tucson, welcome back to the program. We are with Dennis Arnold, the founder of Barrio Brewing Company, and here in Tucson, Arizona, set to become the very first in the nation to transfer the entirety of the business's ownership to its employees at one time when it goes into place here in January through an employee stock ownership plan, kind of a first in the nation story that we're proud to present here on this show here in Tucson, and just really cool to have you here. One of the things we talked about over the break is let's get into the real quick some of the dynamics of what it means for a business to enter into an employee stock ownership plan. What does that mean? What does that look like for the employees to be basically the shareholders of the company?
It's really interesting from their perspective, I think from one day basically working for somebody else to try to wrap your head around is all of a sudden we're working for ourselves. Mm-hmm. So what decisions, you know, do you make that all of a sudden you're doing? So, you know, we spent many hundreds of hours researching this and going to conferences and getting our head wrapped around, because there's a lot of different decisions to be made. And so we saw that there was a long history of companies that have done this out that we could learn from and try to pick what would be best for our employees. And one of the things is thinking about having to put together employee committees to talk about compensation, because going forward, they're going to be the ones making these decisions.
Right.
And it's really tough all of a sudden going, well, wait a minute, well, I want to be on that committee. Okay, so then, you know, how do you do the dynamics of, do you just get the people that have been there the longest, you know, are a natural thing to go to. We also look at this business being broken down into, we have our wonderful Barrio Brewing Company restaurant down at 800 East 16th Street. That's one component. So you have a restaurant component. On the other side, we have a wholesale beer component. And these two business, there's like two businesses being ran at the same time. They all have different needs and things like that. So the best that I can do is from an advisory role is go, don't make the mistakes that a lot of people have done. Like, don't try to go sell beer in San Diego, California, because there's 156 breweries in that county right now. The history of craft brewing is beautiful in America. You yeah. saw it start up, and I was fortunate enough to be there at the beginning.
Really?
And so, you know, I was back when there was just a couple hundred breweries, and now currently there's 10,000 entities Jeez. Holding federal brewing licenses. So, you know, the decisions that a lot of people have made and what they're going to do, the component of food, the large scale that we do things on. And this was also part of, we got our start as Gentle Ben's Brewing Company.
That's
so
right.
That was an 800 plus seat restaurant, bar, nightclub, brewery. You know, we've never done things on a small scale. So it was a natural thing for us to say 100% ESOP, let's go for it, because we've always been all in. And my wife and I have been incredibly fortunate that we've never had a plan. We just kind of get up in the morning and make the best decisions we can. And things have worked out very, very well for us. And I think that it gets back to the culture of family.
Right.
We've never taken crazy risks. We've never said, hey, you know, it's our time to go do something crazy and sell beer across the country or whatever. It's kept a nice, steady oak tree-like growth. And what the brewing industry has done over the last 5 years or so, as you've seen massive billion-dollar failures, because you had a lot of egos out there thinking that everybody is going to love my beer. America right now has better beer than any place else in the world.
Mm.
Probably at the same time, it's got the worst beer too, because there's just so damn much of it out there. And I just hope that a friend of mine says, well, the garden will weed itself. So there's a lot of people that climbed in. I didn't quite know what they were doing and didn't get any better at it. And so, you know, the garden will weed itself, which basically means those places will go out. Somebody else will come back in, and it's a dynamic industry, and it's a really cool one to be in. I mean, you're eating and you're drinking for a living, and it's been a really satisfying
That's cool.
career.
So the basic idea, as we head to our last question, something I'm curious to get your thoughts on, many of my listeners will know too, but just to recap, an employee stock ownership plan is basically the employees now have the shareholder decision-making around key mission and vision and strategy, and how much people get paid, and then any increase in profit, they get a share of that basically.
Yeah, the profits, how it works is, 100% of the profits of the company go into a trustee's account. And then the trustee is charged with dispersing that money. And this is all driven by the Department of Labor rules.
Got it.
And so they make it so, he said, this is for retirement. This isn't about, you know, in 5 years, I'm going to sell some stocks so I can go buy myself a motorcycle.
Right.
This is about, you know, when it gets down to it and you retire, that you're going to have a very large chunk of money come your way. So you have, you know, you've got got the rest of your life.
Got
you know,
it.
you work the first half of your life to take care of the second half of your life is the way that the American system should work. And for a lot of people, that second half isn't there because it wasn't thought about.
Right.
And I, you know, so what we've done is kind of said, well, like it or not, guys, we got a plan for you. So if you work at Barrio Brewing Company and you like the people you work with, continue to work there. And then at the end of the day, at the end of the time that you've put in, is then you're going to have a nice retirement plan. And that's something that not very few people are really going to have.
Absolutely. And it's just a really unique way that I think today's business can take care of its employees. And one of the largest breweries in Arizona, as Barrio Brewing Company is really making history as the first brewery to go all in this format all at once. Really special. We have 2 minutes left. Dennis Arnold, founder of Barrio Brewing Company. Tucson is really dominated by food and drink and the service industry, 60% of which are like yours, family owned, independent, family operated, locally operated. What's in 2 minutes, what's been the best thing about being in Tucson for that? What's been the hardest thing?
Well, Tucson, if you can make it in Tucson, and I'm a native Tucsonan, so that was a fantastic advantage for us because I understood what makes Tucson. And there's been like, you know, like the fellow from Tucson or the fellow from that came down from Phoenix, Bianchi Pizza. Here's a James Bard Award winner that came to Tucson. And he couldn't make it.
Yeah.
And so there's a lesson there in that you got to first understand Tucsonans and you've got to treat them right. And you've got to understand what they want. And once you do that and you do it in a nice enough way, we have loyalty from Tucson that I think is the true value of the company.
Yeah.
It's not the tables, it's not the chairs, but it's the people that work at Barrio Brewing, having relationships with the customers that bring them back in time and time again. The most unique thing about Barrio is that our business across the board stays steady. You don't see a dip in the summer.
Wow.
Because we are all about locals. We don't live on tourists. We don't live on students. We live on Tucsonans. And that's who I really, that's the story of our success, is that Tucson appreciates what we do and we appreciate them for coming in day in and day out.
We want our listeners to keep doing that. Anyone who hasn't been to your locations, where can they go to get some food and drink from you?
Well, we have hundreds of taps across Tucson because we're also supported by all of the other bars and restaurants in town,
right,
and supporting local. And that's super important to do. We've got a very cool location down just off of downtown at 800 East 16th Street. And you got to come on down. The whole place was built out of recycled material and it's got a great vibe to it. And I think that's its strength.
Tucson, support Barrio Brewing Company, who is supporting local Tucsonans. Great Tucson story. Dennis Arnold, thank you for being here.
Thank you so very much for having me, Zach.
Yeah, and for flying with unexpected events. Tucson, thanks for being here. This is Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. We're out for today. See you 9 a.m. on Thursday, every day, 9 to 10. Take care.